Begin this morning, I would like to ask you to turn to James chapter 5. We're going to read verses 7 through 12 of James chapter 5. Beginning with verse 7. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment. Now, as context for this reading, turn to Matthew chapter 5. I'm going to read beginning with verse 38 through verse 42. It's often been pointed out that the Epistle of James is more like the Sermon on the Mount than any other New Testament book. And I believe Matthew 5, verse 38 and following, addresses the same subject we just read in James chapter 5, 7 through 12. So Matthew 5, 38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Now, if we had to come up with one word that summarizes the main theme in these sections, what do you think that word would be? Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever been mistreated? Have you ever been exploited? Have you ever been taken advantage of? If so, you've experienced the theme that ties these passages together. In the first six verses of James chapter 5, James is talking about mistreaters, those who mistreat others. And in James' study, they are mainly rich people who in various ways are cheating their employees, their servants. They are defrauding them. They are holding back some of what they owe them. They are mistreating them. In James 5, verses 7 through 12, James talks about the mistreated. First six verses, the mistreaters. Next section, the mistreated. And what I think makes this particularly tragic here in James chapter 5 is because those who are doing the mistreating, not just those who are being mistreated, but those doing the mistreating are Christians. James is not talking about some secular employer out here that you work for who makes no pretense about being a Christian and doesn't act like he's a Christian. No, James is writing and talking about people who claim to be brethren, who claim to be Christians. And it's certainly the case that Christians can act like the world. One of the things James is trying to tell us is to keep yourself unspotted from the world. It's certainly the case that Christian employers can fall into the same sort of mistreatment practices that characterize unforgiven employers. And so we talked about the employers who were doing the mistreating a couple of weeks ago, but this morning we're talking about something that I think for this group hits much closer to home. Because we're talking about when we've been mistreated, And when we've been mistreated, we have bumped up against one of the biggest temptations we'll face in life. And that's the temptation to retaliate. That's the temptation to respond in kind. When you've been cheated some way, what are you going to do then? How are you going to react? James chapter 4, the verse 12 verses there, talk about wars. What we learn from James 4 is that wars begin when a man allows his desire for something to be met or satisfied in a satanic way. All sin begins with a desire within us. Now, people can have different desires. I desire vanilla ice cream more than I desire butterscotch ice cream. Whenever Dad would stop at Ernie's Market on the way home after Wednesday night Bible study to get a quart of ice cream, if he walked out with butterscotch, he might as well just kept going, as far as I was concerned, and stop and get butterscotch ice cream. I didn't like butterscotch, but Dad did. Whorehound candy. You know what whorehound candy is? Dad loved that stuff. I didn't want it anywhere near me. We have different desires, and there's nothing wrong with having a different desire. Nothing wrong with desiring butterscotch ice cream. But when the devil comes, like he did in Genesis chapter 3, Christ put something that was very desirable off limits. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We know it was desirable because it was attractive, it was goodly to look upon, it tasted good, and Eve thought it would make her wise. And the devil came and triggered Eve's desire and encouraged her to satisfy her desire regarding that fruit in a way that broke the law of God. And when Eve took the fruit and ate it, according to James, James chapter 1, sin conceived. Sin, lust, when it is enticed, brings forth sin. And wars start when one man's desire is satisfied in an ungodly way. Wars are ended when the people involved in the war are willing to act in humility. Now, in talking about war, we're not just talking about Ukraine. We're not just talking about the Middle East. We're not just talking about Taiwan. In talking about wars, we're often talking about ourselves, because often we are a civil war. There's a war going on within us. And if you've been mistreated, you are now being tempted by the devil to strike back, to get back in some way. Christ said, if a man smites you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. Christ said, if a man forces you to go a mile with him, that referred to the Roman law of compulsion. A Roman soldier could compel a Jew, a member of an occupied country, to help him for the distance of 1 mile. Here's a Roman soldier. He's been assigned to the garrison in Jerusalem. And he's got his luggage, he's got his equipment, and he lands down there on the coast, around Caesarea maybe, Joppa, and he's got to get up to Jerusalem. He could force a Jew. He could grab any Jew and compel that Jew to carry his luggage for 1 mile. And when the Jew went a mile, he could sit it down, and the Roman would have to grab another Jew. Christ says, if you are forced into something, you do twice as much as you're being forced to do. Christ says, if a man takes you to court to sue you for your shirt, you throw in your coat. I can't imagine somebody wanting to take me to court to sue me for this shirt I've got on. I mean, his court fees are a whole lot more than this shirt costs. This shirt was free, by the way. But people can sue over all kinds of silly things. And someone takes you to court for some nuisance, You ever heard of that word used in reference to a court case? A nuisance trial, a nuisance accusation. You give him more than he's asking for. And Christ says, if some person who's taken advantage of you wants to borrow money from you, ask for a loan, ask for help, you help him. Jesus said, when you come in contact with those who mistreat you, resist not evil. The evil Christ is talking about in Matthew 5, 38, 42 are those who in some way or other take advantage of us. And when that happens, when we've been slapped on the cheek, what's our reaction? What's our reflex in cases like that? Well, it's to punch back, isn't it? Not just to get even, to get more. We never want to just get even. We want to get more. We're going to teach them a lesson. And when we're forced to do something, we'll do the minimum, the absolute minimum. I'm not going to go a step farther than 1 mile. And when we are taken to court, when we're sued over something silly, I'll countersue. And don't even think about asking me for help if you fall into hard times. That's our reaction. That's what the devil is tempting us to. And the only way we're going to stop the war, somebody slaps us, somebody forces us, somebody sues us. The only way you're going to stop the personal war between you and that individual is by acting in humility. And that's what James is talking about. James is talking about what we do when we've been punched. In sports, there's a famous principle that it's the second guy who gets caught. You know, often in football or in basketball, you know, some guy will throw an elbow into a fella, or somebody will do a late hit, and the officials are looking the other way, but the guy who's been hit, the guy who's been tackled after the whistle, he jumps up and goes after the guy who did it to him, and that's what the officials see. Christ and James, Jesus and James, brothers in the flesh, are talking about how we're to respond to a late hit. How we're to respond to an elbow thrown that the ref doesn't catch. In this context of James 5, how do we respond when our employer has cheated us out of the money he said he would pay us? The money he owes us. What's to be our response? Well, that's what we're going to look at. And I'll tell you right now, there are four things that James says is to govern the Christian reaction. Now, if you're in a union, and even if the union has a legitimate gripe against management, and because they've got a legitimate gripe, management's not treating the workers properly, and the union says, we're going to strike. We're calling a strike. One thing the Christian is going to have to do at that point is decide, is he following the union or is he following Jesus Christ? Keeping yourself unspotted from the world can be a lot tougher than you think, can it? The world says to management, you did us that, this to us, we're going to do this to you. The Christian's told, keep yourself unspotted from the world. How did Christ respond to mistreatment? Let me give you one other passage before we go into the four things that James talks about. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 to 23, just a few pages after James chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 to 23. Verse 21, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us. Christ was mistreated, he suffered for us. And he left us an example that we should follow his steps. And here's Christ's example when he was mistreated. He committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, when he was insulted, he did not insult in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but he committed himself to him who judges righteously. And the example of Christ is to be followed whether we're in a union or not. The example of Christ is to be followed when we get the late hit or the unseen elbow that the refs didn't pick up. So James is going to tell us now how we're to respond to mistreatment. He's going to say four things. He's going to say, number one, guard your will. Guard how you react. And the word that he uses that's to govern our will is the word patience. Have you noticed how frequently he comes to this word here in James chapter 5? He says in verse 7, be patient. He talks about a farmer waiting patiently. He says in verse 8, be patient. He says in verse 10, take the prophets, look to the prophets as an example of patience. He talks about the perseverance of Job. Patience, patience, patience. That's to be the Christian reaction. Now, what is patience? James actually uses two words here that can be translated patience. The first word there in verse 7 and in verse 8 and in verse 10 is a word that literally means long-tempered. Now, what's long-tempered? It's the opposite of short-tempered. You know what a short-tempered person is. They've got a short fuse. They blow up. They fly off the handle. You're always walking on eggshells around them, trying to keep them lighting their fuse. That's short-tempered. James says we're to be long-tempered. Even when provoked, somebody slaps you on your right cheek, even when provoked, we're not going to punch back. We're going to turn the other cheek to them. We're going to be long-tempered. Love, 1 Corinthians 13, is said to be long-suffering, and it's said to be patient. So that's one word he uses, but in verse, is it 11? Yes, in verse 11, the word he uses there is translated endure. We're to be patient, we're to endure. Turn back to Hebrews chapter 10. Let me use something from Hebrews to illustrate endurance. There are three commands to the Christian in Hebrews 10. They're found in verse 22, 23, and 25. Here they are. Verse 22. We are to draw near to God. Verse 23. We are to hold fast in our faith. Verse 25. We are to not forsake the assembling of the saints, but we are to encourage, exhort one another. Every time we come to worship, we're here to draw near to God, we're here to get a tighter grip on our faith, and we're here to encourage each other. Now, as the writer of Hebrews proceeds in chapter 10, that can sometimes be a tough thing to do because, you know, there have been times where to come together like we are here means the police might be outside getting ready to burst in. I just read this week that China is cracking down on the Christian groups in China. I know a lot of brethren who have gone to China over the years. My brother's gone to China and has preached the gospel, baptized people, established churches. These churches are typically small. They typically meet in a home. And China's cracking down now. And so Christians want to draw near to God in worship. They want to be encouraged in their own faith. They want to encourage each other. But in Hebrews chapter 10, what the Christians, the writer is writing to God for that is persecution. And he talks about it starting in verses 26 and following. Reproaches, tribulation, persecution. Now, what does it take when the government turns against us, mistreats us, robs us of our religious liberty? What does it take to maintain our relationship with God? Verse 36, Hebrews chapter 10, you have need of endurance. There are times when all we can do is just hang on. Wayne's got a surgery coming up. Larry's got a surgery coming up. They've got to hang on till the surgery occurs. And waiting for that to happen sometimes is the worst part of it all. They've got to hang on. And then once they've had done whatever's going to be done, they've got to hang on while they heal. They've got to outlast all of the trauma and all of the pain. And whenever we've been mistreated, that's what James is saying to us. You hang on, and one reason you hang on is because the Lord is at hand. You see that there in verse 7? Be patient until the coming of the Lord. I don't believe James is talking about the second coming of the Lord. The Lord can come to our situation to relieve us from mistreatment. Sometimes the way the Lord comes and relieves us of mistreatment is by getting the mistreater fired. Sometimes it's by getting the mistreater promoted. That's the joke in schools. If you want to get rid of a bad teacher, promote them. Give them a different job. Sometimes the Lord gets rid of a mistreater by a funeral. Sometimes the Lord just gets us out of the situation, the setting, whatever that is. The Lord knows what's going on. That's why He called the rich to account in the first six verses, warning them, I know what you're doing. And He tells us who they're doing it to, hang on. I know what's happening. I'm going to come and take care of it. And when you remember chapter 4, that our life is but a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away, we don't have to hang on very long. Lena, that poor girl, she hung on. But today it's victory in Jesus for her. When we're mistreated, we're to be patient. Not short-tempered, we're to stay with the Lord in the trial. Secondly, James chapter 5, verse 8. Be patient, establish your hearts. It's not just our will that we have to get control of, it's our feelings as well. We've got to get our feelings under control. This word establish is a word used in Luke chapter 9 where the Lord set His face toward Jerusalem. He established His view in one direction. This is the word used in Luke 16 of a great gulf that is between paradise and torment. It's fixed. It's set. It's determined. We're to have a determination about this that we're going to keep our feelings under control. And often our feelings are the bigger problem. Not our knowledge. We know what we need to do. But it's our feelings that can get so easily out of control. There is a secret about the Titanic. Many people, everybody knows about the Titanic. Did you know, and it was covered up for decades, it was covered up for most of the 20th century, and recent research has established what they knew at the time of the sinking. Did you know there were 27 men shot on board the Titanic by captain and crew when the ship was going down. Some of them shot dead. You know why they were shot? Suppose they had panicked. Men had panicked and were trying to throw men and women out of the lifeboats so they could get in. Women and children first. And men trying to climb over them and take their place in the lifeboats. And captain and officers of the ship had revolvers. And when a man lost all control, there were some that just pulled out and shot so women and children could get in the lifeboat. Our feelings can really get out of control when we've been mistreated. Number three, third thing James says do not grumble, verse 9. Be patient, have your feelings under control, do not grumble, do not gripe. I think some versions say, do not begrudge one another. Okay, so I'm not going to do anything really bad against the person mistreating me, but I'll complain to him to anybody who will listen. I'll gripe about him. I've got a friend whose family established a huge manufacturing business. They went into business in 1972. They've probably done over $500 million worth of business since then. Just ordinary people like you and me. The guy started the company, just had a high school education. And they've recently sold the business. And the member of the family, there are two brothers and a sister. I went to school with the sister. I know her very well. Recently, they sold the business, and when it came time to divide up the business, which they owned equally, the sister may have been taken advantage of by her brother. She may not have gotten the same deal he got. And she told me about that, but so he's my brother. I don't care. That's what she said. I'm not going to make an issue of it. And she didn't. She doesn't. She doesn't complain about the fact she may have been taken advantage of. She's gone on with her life. She's as happy as she can be. And that's what James is saying. You may not pick up a rock and break your employer's front window. And don't gripe about him either. And then the last thing. Verse 12. And you know, and James says, remember the prophets. The prophets were men who had privileged positions in the kingdom of God, but they did not have protected positions. In fact, many of the prophets we know about chiefly because of the suffering. Think about Daniel, deported out of his homeland. Thrown into a den of lions. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into a fiery furnace. And how they reacted to that. Think about Jeremiah thrown into a cistern, left to die. Think about Hosea, broken family, broken marriage. These men, we know about them because they suffered, but they persevered. And the reason we talk about them and study them today is because they had endurance. They outlasted the trial. And verse 12 almost seems disconnected from what we're talking about, because again, verse 12 says, above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment. Where does that come from? Be patient, establish your hearts, don't complain, and don't swear. That just doesn't seem something that would logically follow there. But I think it does follow. I think it fits in exactly. Because we can sin with our tongues. James has a lot to say in this epistle about sinning with our tongues. He says, no man can tame the tongue. And sometimes when we've been mistreated, we will say things like this: I swear I'm going to get even. I swear you'll regret this. When you swear, you're invoking God as a witness to something. We require oaths in court. James is not talking about judicial oaths here. Having a man put his hand on the Bible and say, I swear to tell the truth, that's the price we pay for living in an ungodly world, living in a fallen, sinful world. And we require judicial oaths, hoping even bad men, knowing they'll answer to God for what they're about to say, will tell the truth. But we sometimes bring things like that into our everyday language. I swear on a stack of Bibles. And in that we become irreverent. And if Satan can get us just to sin in tongue by being irreverent in some form or fashion, then he's happy. He's succeeded. The next time you're mistreated, remember James. Remember what he tells us our reaction is going to be. We're going to wait patiently. We're going to wait because the Lord is coming. The Lord is at hand. The judge is at the door. And we're going to endure. And like James says, those who endure are the ones who are blessed. That's our reaction to mistreatment. This past week, there was a fella at the nursing home that the people I was staying with would pick up for services. His name is Larry, about my age, a little bit older. I don't know about his family. He didn't seem to have any family. And we would go to the nursing home, bring him out in his wheelchair, get him in the car, put the wheelchair in the back, and go to services. Nice fella. And I'd talk to him back, and I was in the back seat. I'd talk to him as we were going to services. And one night, somebody asked him how everything was. And he says, well, I'm having trouble sleeping. I have trouble getting to sleep. I have trouble staying asleep. Does that sound like anything you know about? And he says, I have nightmares when I sleep. And then he said something that got my attention when he said it. He said, you know what I'm looking forward to when I get to heaven? A good night's sleep. He's hanging on. He's enduring. Because of where he's going and what he'll have when he gets there. If there's any way we can be of assistance to you this morning in your life as you seek to please the Lord, let us know what we can do to help. And now's a good time to do that while together we stand and while we sing.